In the episode, Greg Pakaitis, what rapper is Tom dressed as? Answer at the end of the episode.
The citizens of Pawnee.
I'm Kurt Hapley, and I just realized I'm not holding my microphone.
And I will call my new Italian fast casual eatery the Local Calzone Zone.
You can trust me, because I don't care enough about you to lie.
Everything I do is the attitude of an award winner, because I've won an award.
I made my money the old-fashioned way. I got run over by Alexis.
Hello, welcome to Citizens of Pawnee, a Parks and Recreation podcast where I discuss anything and everything from character breakdowns to episode rewatches, as well as some other trivia and tidbits about the show. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. This is episode number 98, being recorded Monday, November 27th, 2023, and today I'm going to be covering Season 3, Episode 13, The Fight. If you'd like to contact the show, you can email citizensofpawnee@gmail.com. You can also follow and message the show on Instagram at Citizens of Pawnee Podcast, as well as my other page at Parks Rec Memes. And just a reminder that this podcast will have full spoilers for the entire series. So what is up, everyone? Oh, man, I am feeling so much better than last week. I'm rejuvenated. Happy Thanksgiving, by the way, to everyone. I can't believe I forgot to say that last episode, at least telling people, hey, have a happy Thanksgiving. But yeah, so I'm a piece of shit and I forgot. Also, I forgot to shout out my daughter, Natalie. She turned 9 years old. Natty, love you. Happy birthday. I had 5 days off of work for the holidays, so it was fucking incredible. We get this every year. We get Wednesday, Thursday, Friday off. But yeah, Thanksgiving was good. Went over by my parents' house in like the mid-afternoon. My little sister Jessica is in town from Denver. I haven't seen her in like 2 years, no joke. Like last time I saw her, honestly, if you go back to episode number 25 of this podcast, she was on that one with me. She was the first guest I ever had. And we argued a lot, but that's because we are both very passionate about our favorite shows. Hers being The Office, mine being Parks and Rec. So the episode was just comparing characters. So we were trying to, it was pretty fun. If you want to go back to that episode, we didn't really argue that much. It was more off the air because it was like, no, we can't do this. But anyway, so it was awesome to see her. Got to see my family, got to see Elf from Melmac. He came in for the weekend. That was fun. But yeah, football sucked this week because my teammate and I, Elf, who I just spoke of, we lost to my cousin Tim's team, who I'm going to talk about Tim in just a minute here. But man, I haven't talked much about fantasy football this year. I've been needing to talk about it because no one fucking wants to hear about fantasy football if they don't play. And another thing, too, is like if you don't ask someone about their fantasy football team and they just start telling you about it, it's like, oh, God, who cares? So I'm not going to do that. But anyway, we did lose to my cousin Tim, that bastard. So anyway. But yeah, the weather is we finally got some snow that is sticking here in Illinois, and it is cold as balls, man. It's like 25 degrees out. I don't know. I mean, like, that's pretty much what it was all day. We're supposed to get a heat wave later in this week. It's going to get up to like 40, so that'll be sweet. But yeah, I was able to, over the break, get a lot done. I got the Christmas tree up, got all the Christmas stuff out of the crawl space. So we're slowly kind of getting the house, into our like little winter wonderland thing. I got our little Santa with the reindeer set up in the front yard. I didn't put up the house lights yet though. I should have done that when it was nice. Now I'm probably going to have to wait till next weekend when it's like mid 40s. So, but anyway, you know what? So I mentioned my cousin Tim. I've mentioned him on this podcast before. He's the one that got me into shows like Shrinking and Severance and Ted Lasso, actually. So he texted me earlier last week and he invited me to go see, there was like a stand-up show. It's hard to say like what exactly this was. So anyway, there is a podcast called Bad Friends. Some of you may have heard of this. Some of you may listen to it. This is a very popular podcast from what I found because I had never heard of it before my cousin texted me. So he texted and he just said, hey, I got an extra ticket to go see Bad Friends Live. It's a podcast. And then he told me who's on the podcast, Bobby Lee and Andrew Santino. And it's like, oh, well, I know Bobby Lee. You know, he was on Mad TV and he's in a bunch of stuff. He just has like so many small bit parts, but I've always liked him. He's fucking hysterical and he's just like kind of a sloppy actor. Like in seeing him live was just kind of a confirmation of that. It's like, yeah, because he looked like a homeless man that was like on a bender for weeks. But anyway, yeah, so I was excited about that. And then Andrew Santino, I had never heard of, but my cousin was like, yeah, he's very funny. He's a Chicago actor. He's from the area. So I looked him up and I recognized him immediately because how I relate pretty much everything in this world, it's got to be either a movie or a TV show. Well, this guy is an actor. So, but anyway, The Office. He was in one episode of The Office. He is in the episode where Andy and Aaron, this is in season 9, I think. Yeah, like when Andy left for a long time because he was filming one of those stupid hangover movies. But anyway, when him and Aaron went to go because they were losing the boat, and he was like, hey, well, let's go check it out, see if we can sail it one last time. Andrew Santino, the actor, he was playing the character, the guy that kept like fighting with Andy, because like Andy kept trying to like steer the ship and put up the sail and everything, and this dude kept coming by and like slapping his hands and telling him like fuck off, like no, this, you know, we own this ship now, you don't get to. So anyway, that's how I knew him. But yeah, this was Saturday night. I was very excited about it. So Tim lives like an hour away from me. So he drove, and like the city is on the way for him. Like he has to come like far to get to the city, and like I'm on the way. So we decided to meet at the train station in my town. So he met me there. Everything was great. We got on the train. We started headed down. Tim, again, I got to thank you for this. If you're listening, thank you for doing all the navigating on Saturday night, because I am terrible with directions and I hate going downtown. Like, I'm proud to say that it's like, yeah, I'm from Chicago. I'm not fucking from Chicago. I'm from the suburbs of Chicago, but you know, it's a beautiful city. Say what you will about like the violence and everything. Obviously that's a big thing, but Chicago, like in its core, is still like a very beautiful city. So we got down, you know, and then we transferred from the train to the L. If you're not familiar with Chicago, the L is like the elevated train tracks, you know, so in like New York and whatnot, they have the subways, but in Chicago, we have the L's. So the trains actually like go throughout the city, like above. It's pretty badass. So anyway, we got to the Chicago Theater, which I have never been to, the historic Chicago Theater, which was really funny, actually, because like when we get in there, we sit down and, you know, we got there early, but we get in and then you hear like the little, like the lights start to dim and it's like, hello. It's like, welcome to the Chicago Theater, brought to you by the Madison Square Garden. And it's just like, wait, what? Like, why the fuck are we owned by the Madison Square Garden? I don't like it, but I'm guessing it's just like a, you know, some kind of ownership group. Who knows? Anyway. So, you know, like we had no problems getting down to the show. It was awesome. Got in, found our seats, and it was awesome. It was a fucking great show. Bobby Lee, well, the first, the opener of the show was, Jessie Johnson is her name on the show. I guess she goes by Jet Ski. I'm starting to listen to the podcast. I'm still not that familiar with it though, but it is just like a bunch of irreverence and like a lot of dick jokes and stuff. So right up my alley. But anyway, she was pretty good. She just kind of set the precedent for the show. I feel like, you know, she was going over a lot of the rules for people, you know, like, but while doing her stand-up. So it's awesome that she gets to kind of, she got out there for about 15 minutes or so and she wasn't bad. And then Bobby came out and yeah, like I said, I mean, he came out, he was wearing like a long sleeve Soundgarden shirt that looked like it had been either washed or maybe not washed in like a year. I mean, it was just like so like crusty and, you know, and Bobby, I mean, like he kind of has made a name for himself being this dude that just like doesn't have much responsibility when he's not working. Like, at least I learned a lot of this from my cousin, because I'm not going to lie and say I did research on Bobby Lee. But anyway, he was great. He has a different kind of stand-up where you can tell he doesn't really, or maybe he does, and I don't want to take anything from him, but like, he's not a very polished stand-up comedian. He just kind of goes out there and just fucking yells a lot, and, you know, he uses the crowd a lot, which is great, but he was very funny, but he's more, like, dirty and has a lot of, like, yeah, really, like, poo and, well, semen jokes and just he's you know, whatever. So he was still great, though. It was awesome to see him. My cousin was just like super jazzed to see him. I could see just how excited he was when he came out, because even on the way up there, he's like, dude, I can't wait to see Bobby. I can't wait to see what the fuck he's gonna do. We saw like a little bit of his ass, actually, because apparently at big places like this, he can't go full nude, or he can't like show his you know, his ass and his dick and whatnot, because I don't know, maybe it's a classy place, but apparently he has done this on stage and he's gotten fined and stuff. But anyway, then Andrew Santino came out. Again, I didn't know much about this dude. I just knew him from that episode of The Office, but his stand-up was great. It was a lot more polished. Definitely, you could tell he has a routine, but he is from the Chicagoland area. Actually, he lived for a bit, what I'm hearing, in a town that is very close to me, just like one or two over. I don't know how long. But it was just, it was a really fun time. I was laughing my ass off. I mean, like, you know, when you get to the point where you're trying not to laugh because like your face is hurting, like I was smiling so much, like my cheeks were just like, oh, it's just like, oh my God, like I need a break. But I mean, so they did their stand up and then after that, it was almost like, not like an intermission, but it was kind of like, all right, we're going to start doing like the crowd part. So when you walked in, there was a QR code, like a huge one, just on the screen, on the stage. So when you scan that, it immediately takes you to a waiver form. And my cousin and I are like, hell yeah, because the thing above it was like, get involved. It's like, be a bad friend. So we're thinking, it's like, all right, cool. I mean, like, maybe it'll be like questions or something like that. But then when I saw waiver, it was like, I don't know what the hell this means. I'm not doing that though. Plus I'm not, you know, like most of the people, I mean, there was, I think they said like 3,400 is about the size of the Chicago theater. It was sold out. And I would say I was maybe one of 10 people, and those other 9 people probably being the people who took up the row right in front of us who weren't really familiar with the show. So I also didn't want to get called up there and then like them ask me a question about the show and I just look like an asshole. So anyway, turned out that it wasn't that big a deal. There were questions asked, but it wasn't like, you know, you had to put someone's body parts in your mouth. Well, that's not true. Look at me backtracking, because the people who lost had to like suck Bobby's tongue for a second. One of them was a teacher. I think she said she was a high school teacher. Smartly, she did not say what school she was at. And obviously, like these kind of comedy shows, they tell you it's like no cameras, no filming, nothing. You could do it beforehand. It's fine. Like if you're taking pictures of the theater and stuff, but do not take pictures of us or record us while we're filming. That's just kind of, or while we're filming, while we're doing our stand up. So, but anyway, yeah, it was a really good time. The second half of it was just, like I said, it was crowd participation where they had people up there. It was almost like a game show type thing. Not as good as the first half of the show, because I feel like the two mostly, because I don't really know the opening girl that much, but the other two, it's like I would have liked to see more of just them doing stuff. But you know, yeah, I mean, you're kind of, they come from a podcast, they're both comedians, but it's like, all right, obviously they're not doing a live recording, so what are they gonna do? So I mean, it's cool that they, you know, what the stuff that they do, the material they have to work with, and then like, even, you know, just, hey, what are we gonna do to entertain these people for the next hour or so? But yeah, Bad Friends, the podcast, check it out. I'm going to say right now, it's not for everyone. I'm still, I was listening to the brand new episode today, and even coming in, I was just kind of like, wow, there's a lot going on here. And I'm coming into this podcast very late because I don't know anything about like the different segments and like the side producers and everything. They keep talking to people. It's like, I don't know who any of them are. So I'm going to have to learn that, because I really enjoyed seeing those two guys live. So I'm guessing I will like the podcast. All right, let's get into some filler.
Everything he's saying is nonsense, and he's fooling them.
So quickly, actually, this isn't really some... Well, I did watch this, but this is just a really quick one. I wanted to throw this one out for you guys. A good Christmas movie to check out, just because we watched it. We actually, my family and I, we saw this in the theater when it came out, but Dr. Seuss is The Grinch. That is, I think, the newest one. Unless you're talking about the horror movie, which was called The Mean One. I don't even know if that came out. I'm guessing it did eventually. My sister and I talked about it on our horror podcast, but I don't think either of us saw it. But anyway, so yes, Dr. Seuss is The Grinch. This is the one with Benedict Krampus Scrunch. That guy. The guy who plays Doctor Strange. But anyway, yeah, no, it's just it's a good, fun movie. It's animated. It looks really great because it's Illumination, the company that did like the Minions movies and the Despicable Me. But yeah, this is just a beautiful movie because it takes place like in the mountains in Whoville, you know, so it's like just, it's gorgeous, especially if you're watching on like a nice big TV with the mountains and everything. And then just like how beautiful the town looks all the time when it's lit up. Doctor Strange is he's really good as the Grinch. And then the dog, Max, I think Max is like a staple in the Grinch. So I think Max is always around. But anyway, just so cute. You know, it doesn't talk or anything. But Kenan Thompson, he is one of the voices. He's like this one of the townies. Because, you know, all the Who's, the people, they're like the nicest people alive. And the Grinch is such an asshole. And it's like they don't really, like when he's being an asshole, they just can't like not, I don't know. It's like they don't know what that means. They're just like, he's like, ah, screw you and Christmas. And they're like, okay, great. We'll see you tomorrow. You know, stuff like that. But that's how it always is. But anyway, yeah, that character, Kenan Thompson, plays is really funny. And then for your Parks and Rec, your Citizens of Pawnee, you got Rashida Jones doing the voice of the little girl's mom, Cindy Lou, Cindy Sue, Cindy Who, I don't know. But Ann Perkins plays her mother. So, all right. A newer movie I did see. The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. So this one just came out like a week or two ago. I am a huge fan of the original Hunger Games trilogy, both the books and the movies. The books are obviously a lot better. They're a lot more violent. They can get away with a lot more. If you are unfamiliar with The Hunger Games, it is essentially just a dystopian future where they pretty much settle differences among our country, which is called Panem, but it is like the remains of the United States. So this does take place in the future, at least according to the lore, I guess. But anyway, The Hunger Games, it's just basically a bunch of kids go in an arena and they kill each other every year. And then whoever wins, wins. So I know that sounds terrible, but the books are actually very intriguing. So I remember seeing when this book came out, the Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. I was at Target with, I don't know, my brother or sister. I know I was with someone. And the Hunger Games books, they all have very similar covers. Like, they're different colors, but you can see that Mockingjay right on the front, and then there's just the distinct font for, like, you know, the Hunger Games Mockingjay, and then the Hunger Games, geez, I'm forgetting the names of the movies. Catching Fire, that's the second one. And I'm like, I'm a huge Hunger Games fan, but I don't know shit about it. So, anyway, when I saw this book, it, like I said, it stood out to me because I recognize, you know, they had it looked very similar to the other books. And I was just like, holy shit, I didn't know that they were making any more of these. The book was written by Suzanne Collins, who wrote the other three. So I was like intrigued, but admittedly, there was no way I was going to buy this book and read it. Like, I just didn't care that much. And it's like, plus, I just listen to every like audiobooks, which kind of counts, but not really. But I never got around to listening to this one just because I kind of forgot about it and I knew it was a prequel. It was just about President Snow's like kind of rise to, you know, where he is now. President Snow being the villain played by Donald Sutherland in the movies. But anyway, so this movie came out a couple weeks ago. And when I saw the trailers, again, having not really any information about what this movie was, except that it was a prequel. And it's like, okay, they're probably going to tell us a little more about like the history of the games, the Hunger Games, and like where they started. That was kind of how it was, but not necessarily, because like when this movie takes place, so this is what's weird about it. The movies that we have seen already, the other Hunger Games movies, so let's just say that's like 100 years from now. That's when that takes place. So these movies, or this movie, The Songbird of Snakes and whatever, too long of a title, it's stupid, takes place during the 10th Hunger Games. So 65 years before where those movies were, because that's about, I think it was like the 74th, 5th, and 6th Hunger Games. That's where they were in those books. So it's funny though, because you're like, all right, so this is a prequel. So it's in the past, but it is still in our future. So they do that thing though, where they dumb it down too much and they make it like, we got to let these people know it's in the past. So like all the TV monitors and everything look like our TV monitors from the past, like in the like 60s, 70s, 80s, like tube TVs and shit. It's like, why don't they have technology better than what we have right now? Because when you watch those newer Hunger Games movies, it's like, holy shit, like the stuff they do. And even in this one, it's like the stuff they're allowed to do. It's like, why? I don't understand why they, for the visual, they let us know it's like, oh man, this is the 10th Hunger Games. This was a long time ago, but it's still in the future from us. So everything we see should look better than our TVs. They should be way fucking better. But anyway, yeah, I guess, again, I think they just do that to let you know that it's like, remember, this is a prequel. This is a prequel. All right, so the movie itself, though, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't great, but I thought it was cool seeing the rise of the Hunger Games. Like I said, not so much President Snow, because that's what I thought it was going to be, but it is actually, the movie is revolved around him. And when I talked to one of the librarians at the school I work at, she had a really good point. She's like, the trailers are making it look like I'm going to be rooting for President Snow. And he's such an awful character. I don't want to do that. And I was like, yeah, that's a very good point. Because they kind of did that to us actually in the newest Saw movie, Saw X, where it's like John Kramer is a piece of shit murderer, but we're supposed to like feel sympathetic for him and almost be like, okay, yeah, man, these people deserve it. So it kind of sucked in that sense, but I still recommend Saw X and I still recommend this movie. But anyway, because yeah, that's not what this was for this. You weren't watching President, like he was, again, you were supposed to be kind of rooting for the girl that he's supposed to be saving. Her name is Lucy Gray, and she's played by Rachel Zegler, who, in my opinion, just tried way too hard to be Katniss Everdeen, who is Jennifer Lawrence's character from the other Hunger Games movies. Rachel Zegler, I don't know much about her, except apparently she keeps putting her foot in her mouth and getting in trouble in Hollywood. She was saying, like, I guess she's playing Snow White, or maybe she already did play Snow White in, like, a live-action Disney version of that. But she just kind of came out and just started saying, like, oh, well, that's stupid. We're doing this instead because of that. You know, and a lot of people were just like, like, no, you can't talk shit about our Disney movies. And, you know, it was her making a lot of stupid comments because it's like, this is the movie you're promoting. Stop, like, being like, well, you know, this was dumb. You don't have to do that. I don't know everything, but I did look at a couple of them because I was just kind of curious. It's like, okay. But nothing like, she doesn't have any scandals or anything. She's just kind of, like, saying dumb things. And, like, again, she's not being canceled or anything. But anyway, she sings way too much in this movie. She's a very good singer. She has a beautiful voice, but it's like, I don't need to hear her sing three or four times. Like, one time's fine. And then also in the trailers, there's that song, I think it's called The Killing Tree or something. It's like, are you going to the, and again, I think it's Killing Tree, but that's actually an old punk band too. So I might just be thinking of that, but it's something like that. That song's in the movie like five times. You're just like, what the fuck? Starts getting old. Peter Dinklage is in the movie. He plays, I guess he would be like one of the main villains, him and then Viola Davis. And she's more like a mad scientist. She's always a lot of fun just because she's like an Academy Award winning actress. And you see her sometimes taking like really weird roles, like how she's in the DC universe. But yeah, it was more violent than I thought it was going to be. And in this one, since it was an earlier one, I don't know if they just did this so they could get away with more, but it was like an older group of people who were in the Hunger Games, like competing against each other. Cause at least like, in the newer, or like the Hunger Games books, the proper trilogy, it's anywhere from like, I think the age of 12 to 18, you can go in and fight. But in this movie, it looks like it was more like teenagers / young adults. So I don't know if they always had this age thing, but yeah, a lot of the violence they show, you know, it's PG-13, so they can't go nuts with it. So they cut away a lot, but I mean, there's one like where a guy takes like an axe to the neck. And I mean, like they literally get right to there before they cut away and then show someone's reaction, which, yeah, I'd rather see blood, but I know in these movies you're not going to get a lot of it. Like, spoiler, big spoiler for the third Hunger Games book, the final movie, right now, like Julianne Moore in the movie, she turns out to be like, her character turns out to be like the kind of like hidden villain almost. So Katniss kills her at the end of the movie, like shoots her with an arrow. And she falls from like 10, 15 feet. And then when they show her like from above, there's like one little stream of blood. You know, it's just, it's like in the MCU movies when Black Widow like fell off a cliff and should have exploded on impact. And then they just show her and there's like a little blood around her head. But that's PG-13. So the movie was a bit long, about 2.5 hours, which seems to be the norm for like kind of movies like this that are, you know, big budget, like based on something. So I get it. I mean, the book is probably like 500 to 600 pages, I'm guessing, because that's maybe not even that many, maybe like 300 to 400. So I get it. You can't have the movie be an hour and 10 minutes, but 2.5 hours for this movie was a little too long, because it felt like it was one of those movies where it's like, all right, it's, oh no, it's not. Okay, fade to black. All right, it's nope, still going. But yeah, you know what though, I would give this movie it's like a 6.75 out of 10. So, all right. Then the last thing I wanted to talk about actually is Parks and Rec, which I'm not jumping into the episode yet, but over the weekend I started watching season 6. I jumped in, I think like episode 5 or 6. So I got past like the doppelgangers episode. So Craig was already in it when I started. But I just have a couple observations I want to talk about. And this is almost just like a look ahead to season 6. This is not like a new segment I'm doing, or maybe it is. I don't know. Maybe if I just start watching a different thing of or different Parks and Rec episodes and come up with anything I wanted to talk about. So what I, some things that stood out, just because we're on season 3 now and then watching season 6, I've seen all these episodes dozens of times, but still, it's like, for me, it's like, even if I haven't watched in like a couple months, it's like, all right. So I put those on. A couple observations, like Tom Haverford, still a selfish dick, but way more likable, because he starts to mature a little bit more. This is when Tom is like really trying to like make and like find out what he wants to do in his life. So you do see like he still has a lot of shitty comments like, ah, soon I'll never have to see you again. But like he comes off as more of a friend, if that makes any sense. Like one of my favorite ones is when him and Leslie are having the kind of battle about they're trying to set up. Tom wants to set up a lemonade stand in, I think it's like Ramsett Park. Leslie wants to keep Stu Fretch, I think is his name. He makes stews, like hot stews. She wants to keep him there. But there, Tom says something and Leslie talks about like the mousse that she just put in her hair. And Tom's just like, wait, you, Leslie, all beef aside, please tell me you're not still using mousse. And then like at the end of the episode, he actually tells her, he's like, I gave you a serum for your hair, no more mousse. So it's just like, I know that doesn't seem like much, but it's like the way he stops them in the middle of a fight to tell her, he's like, listen, Leslie, like, I know we're fighting right now, but you're my good friend. Like, I can't let you use mousse in your hair. So it's so dumb, but it's great. This is a fun one. I don't think I ever noticed this before, a development in the Jerry and Kyle hierarchy. So I said, I think it was 2 weeks ago, there was the part where they were tasting Chris's hamburgers, and Kyle talked about how he loved the umami or the edamame, whatever it was. And Jerry's like, don't be so pretentious, Kyle. So right there, you're just like, all right, Kyle is more pathetic than Jerry, because Jerry just shut him down. However, in I can't remember the name of the episode or which one it is, but it's the one when they're having the wine and cheese club. So it's like when Anne, it's getting closer to Anne and Chris leaving the show, but it's when Donna, Tom, and Ron and Jerry, they sit in Ron's office, and Ron usually just has headphones on listening to Willie Nelson. And Anne comes in and just starts kind of like, you know, that's what she takes over the club, because she's bitching about Chris. But one thing that I caught that is so funny, Ron, as he's putting his headphones on to drown everyone out, you hear Jerry say, this is the fourth time that Kyle has parked in my spot. So it's like, whoa, wait a minute, actually, maybe Kyle actually somehow jumped back ahead of Jerry, or at least he will by season 6. So I thought that was awesome, especially just because I talked about it recently too. And then I have to, like, in the speaking of Anne and Chris when they leave, and I talked about this, actually, this was my trivia question last week. Oren, when he is dressed as the Easter Bunny, which is so funny because he takes the hat off and he's like, how long do I have to do this? And Leslie's like, put it back on, you know, I'll tell you when. And you see him like start dancing after he does it. So that's really funny. However, when you watch this episode, when you come into it knowing that that's Oren in there, and you watch the Easter Bunny throughout the episode, he is so happy and cheerful and nice to the kids. And you wonder, it's like, is Oren like that under the thing? Or does he just know how to work a crowd, but he's like still miserable? And then the last thing, like, just that kind of stood out to me is just how much better the show looks. Like, filming wise. Like, it's brighter. Like seasons 1 through 3 and maybe even season 4, there was a lot of neutral colors like browns, tans, greens. And yeah, so it's just nice to watch like seasons 5 and 6 when it looks a lot better. But yeah, so now let's talk about the episode at hand. Season 3, episode 13, The Fight, directed by Randall Einhorn, written by Amy Poehler. All right, so for your cold open, we start off at the Parks Department, where the staff is nervously standing around a broken coffee maker. Ron is trying to figure out who broke it, even though no one will admit to it. Tom blames Ben, Jerry blames April, Leslie blames herself, twice actually, but Ron knows she didn't do it, so he keeps going, no, you didn't, which kind of makes me think, why is Leslie even here if Ron knows she didn't do it? But anyway, Ben blames Donna, then everyone starts arguing. Ron knows who broke it, though.
I broke it. It burned my hand, so I punched it. I predict 10 minutes from now, they'll be at each other's throats with war paint on their faces and a pig head on a stick. Good. It was getting a little chummy around here.
I love in that clip, you can, if you listen to it again, you can hear right at the end there, Donna's just like, whatever, Ben Wyatt. It's just a great scene. I've talked about this one before, like when I listed the best cold opens. This is a top 5, definitely, just because Ron, you know, and then it makes me think of, I think it's season 4 when Chris makes, it's the bubble episode. So yeah, it's either I think it's season 4, but anyway, when Ron, or when Tom and Andy have to go work on the fourth floor, and the one dude walks in and he's just like grabs the coffee pot and he's like, hey, does Mort Jensen still work here? And they're like, we have no idea who the hell that is. And he just smashes it against the wall and he's just like, tell Mort your move. And like, Tom's terrified and Andy loves it. It's so hilarious. But okay, so end of the episode. We're back in the office and Tom is once again inviting everyone to his club, the Snake Hole Lounge. Tonight he'll be unveiling his new Kahlua style liqueur, Snake Juice. He tells everyone that there will be a meeting in an hour to go over, I don't know, stuff. He doesn't really say, he just says, meeting, 1 hour, be there or you're on my dunzo list. And his dunzo list means that you're done. Hey, I want to go see a movie with Tom. Nope, we're dunzo. We're not friends anymore. So it's hilarious that Andy's like, babe, we got to make that meeting. But I also love that Tom can just call mandatory non-work related meetings whenever he wants. And like, even his bosses will attend. Like, Ron shows up for this thing. It's great. It's like, what the... All right, so next we're with Leslie and Anne, who are enjoying coffees while catching up. I love that Leslie says, it seems like it's been forever, because Anne hasn't had much to do since Chris dumped her in the show, so it does seem like it's been forever for us too, since like Anne, I mean, she's been in these episodes, but she hasn't had anything really important to do. So I kind of like that. She's like, wow, it seems like it's been forever, because like to us, it kind of seems like that too. Just then, Ben walks by and challenges Leslie to a race to their meeting. So we get a running joke, literally, as Leslie runs into Councilman Hauser. So the running joke there, again, is that Councilman Hauser, he's like the top dog for the councilman, and Leslie respects him very much. She's like the only councilman she does respect. But whenever she's doing something stupid or like goofy or like fucking around or whatever, Hauser always happens to see her, and he's always very just like, Miss Nope. And she's like, Councilman Hauser, like always embarrassed. It never turns into anything. And he like never like thinks any less of her, but it's a hilarious running joke. So they take off, you know, her and Ben, and then Anne is just sitting there with her coffee, just like kind of wondering what the hell just happened. Like, where did Leslie go? So we go over to Tom's meeting. His plan is to get the Parks crew to talk up Snake Juice the whole night. He even made them scripts and ideas on how to bring it up in random conversations. Tom starts to get annoyed, though, when Ron isn't giving it his all. So this is essentially like a play rehearsal with everyone having characters and scripted lines, even though no one really gives a shit besides Tom. So now we're in Chris's office, and he tells Leslie and Ben that they need a new PR director because the last guy, Dennis Cooper, went ballistic after his wife had an affair. In a fit of anger, he made and hung banners all over City Hall.
Jan Cooper will give you chlamydia. Brought to you by the Pawnee Health Department. Chlamydia affects nearly 100% of Jan Coopers. The Department of Health congratulates Jan Cooper, Miss Chlamydia. Jan, I love you. Please come back. I realize that I'm not blameless here. Please. Brought to you by the Health Department. Re-elect Jan Cooper, Mayor of Whoreville.
So obviously that was Chris reading those. That's not Dennis Cooper, but yeah, Chris is the one that he was talking to Ben and Leslie, and he's like, "Didn't you guys see those signs in the hallway?" And they're just like, "Oh yeah." And then that's when Chris starts reading them off. So good. All right, so Leslie, though, she suggests Anne for the job, of course, and Chris loves the idea. However, she didn't run it by Anne, who, mind you, is a full-time nurse. So, this episode's called The Fight. Let's move on. Over to Pawnee St. Joseph Hospital, where Leslie gives Anne what she thinks is good news, but Anne is so obviously not thrilled. Also, the interview is tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., so Leslie even made, you guessed it, a binder for Anne to study. This whole scene just gives you like a good idea of how selfish Leslie can be, because at no point, like in the tenure of this episode or even this series, did Anne ever ask for this. Like, she never, like, she likes hanging out with her friends, I guess, but she never said it's like, man, I wish I could work at the Parks Department. But like, this is for Leslie. It's like, okay, well, we need a PR director for the health department. So it's like, okay, Anne's a nurse, like she'd be a great thought, but like, Leslie hasn't even like mentioned it to her. She's already just putting her name in the hat, just like, okay, yeah, she's good. She'll be there. All right. But yeah, like, so Leslie, like, she really is. She's like making it seem to Anne like she really put herself out there. However, it seems to be working, as Anne is now at least like kind of excited about, you know, the possibility of working with her friends and with Leslie. We go over to the shoe shine stand, where April and Andy are obviously just fucking around like always. April complains about Tom's stupid scripts. However, Andy convinces her that it could be fun if they play the characters at the bar. So they're like, yeah, well, we can go off of Tom's script, but also we can role play a little bit. So when Andy role plays, you know what's coming. We'll get there. So now we're at the Snake Hole Lounge. This is pretty much where we'll be for like the big chunk of the episode. This is a longer episode too, by the way. It's like, it's one of those 25-minute ones, well, without the commercials at least, so it's like an extended cut. The place is jumping. The Snake Hole Lounge, that is. Right after Leslie says hi to Tom, we see our boy John Ralphio. He just comes out of nowhere. It's great. He's in this episode. He's hilarious. And he keeps doing raps for everyone. But it's like, they're good raps, but he keeps ending on the wrong rhyme. You know, like when he's rapping to Tom and it's like, da 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 da, like Big Ben. Like, that's where he's supposed to end. But then he's like Big Ben clock. Like, he just can't help himself. And like, Tom keeps pointing that out. He's like, I know, dude, I know. I'll fix it. We find out that John Ralphio has a bit of a crush on Leslie. We didn't really know this yet at this point, but we find out later in the season that it's like, this is very prevalent. Like, in season 7, I think it is, when they're showing John Ralphio's like what happened to him in the future. He actually like wanted to like, I, he not like didn't get down on one knee, but he basically asked Leslie if she would like marry him and like be in like a fake family with him or something. I don't know. So yeah, you kind of get there, or you see here that he does like he likes Leslie. So she's a bit flattered, but she changes the subject quickly. She then says she has to leave to go help Anne study for tomorrow's interview. However, Anne's not studying at home. She's on the dance floor with Howard Tuttleman, otherwise known as Pawnee Shock Jock the Douche, played by Nick Kroll. Leslie is shocked and maybe horrified as well. Ladies and gentlemen, this is where the fight technically starts. At first, it's a lot of passive-aggressive conversation with Leslie. Like, she's mad, but then she's not mad, but then she's, like, really mad, but still not trying to be mad. As now, like, Anne is saying, yeah, you know, like, I think I'll be at the interview instead of the confirmed yes that Leslie wants to hear. And again, just to add more anger, Anne is hanging out with the douche who, well, he's a douche. So it's just like, again, like, this is just like, you know, like salt in the wound for Leslie, because it's like, yeah, I've met this guy. He's a douche. Meanwhile, we're now with Burt Macklin and the first official appearance of Janet Snakehole. So that's what I was talking about before with these two. Whenever there's role playing, Andy's either going to be Johnny Karate or he's going to be Burt Macklin, or like Andy Radical, which he is in the Greg Pakitis episode before he's Burt Macklin. But anyway, yeah, so I say the first official appearance of Janet Snakehole, because she did use that name earlier this season, and that was when Tom became part of the Snakehole and her and Andy were trying to get free stuff. So she just walked up to the bar and she's like, yeah, I'm Janet Snakehole, I'm the owner's daughter, which is just so, I always make that joke with like my wife, like if I go to Wendy's and I just walk up and I'm like, hi sir, is Wendy working? You know, and it's just like, who? It's like, Wendy's, like, this is her place, right? Is she here? It's like, no, I mean, like, yeah, it's one of those things. So yeah, this will be like her Janet Snakehole's official like garb moving forward, which is like kind of like old timey looking, like, I don't know, like maybe 50s, 60s. I'm not sure, like kind of ballroom style. Like she has like the little kind of net over her face and she's got the cigarette holder thing. I don't know what they're called. You know, it's like the stick that you put the cigarette in. I don't know. Maybe it's just called a cigarette holder. Who knows? Janet Snakehole's story is that she's a very rich widow with a terrible secret. We get a great line as actually after she goes over her thing with Andy, he like breaks character for a second because, you know, he's of course doing like Burt Macklin FBI, but he breaks character and he just kind of gets closer to April and he's like, oh, I'm a little upset. I kind of thought your costume was going to be a little bit sluttier. And she's just like, how dare you? And she slaps him. It's a good slap too. And then she like kind of storms off. It's obviously she's joking, but he smiles a little bit and he's just like, nice. So it's like, I don't know if that turned him on or if he's just more like, okay, like my wife just slapped me. That could be cool. All right. Next we see Ron talking to Tom and John Ralphio. After Ron refuses Tom's offer of some snake juice, Tom says, if you like it, you got to promote it. If not, I'll shave John Ralphio's head. So Ron's actually very intrigued by that. He's like, yeah, sure, I'll give it a try. So he tries the snake juice and he loves it to John Ralphio's, what the hell is the word I'm looking for? To his delight, I guess. Yeah, we'll say that, to his delight. So yeah, he takes a drink of it and then he's just like, all right, so he holds up his end of the deal. He starts walking around the bar. He literally walks up to there's like a couple just like kind of real close to each other. He's like, hello, my name's Ron Swanson. I want you to try this snake juice. And the guy's like, all right, cool, man. Thanks. Like, and he's like, I don't think you understand what I'm saying. He's like, I want you to try it now. So he basically like hands it to the kid and makes him drink it. So yeah, at least he's holding up his end of the deal. So quickly, we cut over to Burt Macklin and Janet Snakehole again. They're like having a lot of fun with the role playing, but you can see that they're getting like more and more intoxicated. So that's one of the funny things about this episode. Like as it cuts to Tom, you can hear a lot more slurring. And then even Ben, like he's starting to get pretty wasted. It's great. So we cut back to Leslie and Anne. Things start getting very snippy, though, when Leslie makes a comment about the men that Anne's been dating lately. She even flat out disses the douche, who's like literally sitting right there. Like he's just like, sit right here. And like Leslie doesn't give a shit. She's like, fuck you, dude. Like basically, because she's talking to Anne. She's like, come on, look at this guy. This isn't going to work out, you know. And Anne doesn't care that she's talking shit about him right there. But he's just kind of like, right here, Leslie. And like I said, she doesn't care. Leslie and Anne, though, both, they say it kind of passive-aggressively, but they're both like, no, everything's fine. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm good. I'm fine. You good? Yeah. So next, Chris Traeger shows up, and so he talks to Tom for a second, and Tom's just like, hey, you got to try my steak juice. It's 140 proof, which is 70% alcohol. Fuck. That is some strong alcohol, dude. Like, yeah, that's like Bacardi 151. That's, what is it? Well, that'd be, what, 70? Actually, that's a little bit higher. Yeah, that's like 75.1 or 75.5 proof. Wow, my math is great. But anyway, yeah, the snake juice is strong and everyone's getting fucked up. Anyway, though, Chris has some bad news for Tom. Apparently, Tom emailed everyone from City Hall telling them to come to a bar that he partially owns to buy an alcohol that he invented. Chris says that this is a big no-no, since it's being viewed as Tom using his power to gain personal wealth. He then tells Tom that he has to sell his shares in the Snakehole Lounge, which I love that Chris just, he doesn't even give him like the option to like, hey, you could quit City Hall. He just tells him, he's like, you got to sell your shares. Like, and that's basically it. But I think that's his way of saying, he's like, if you want to keep a real job, like a steady 9-to-5 job, you got to do this. So, we cut back over to Leslie and Anne, who are now, they're both just like completely hammered. They're arguing. They're even having a dance off. Leslie, a really great scene here. Actually, Leslie, she's like, Anne walks off, or she like kind of storms off with the douche to go dance. And Leslie's like, oh, you know what? She's like, Ben, come dance with me. And he's just like, what? Like, you could tell he's drunk too, because he's like all happy. He's like, she's like, you need to go get me another snork juice. He's like, Leslie, I don't think that's a good idea right now. And again, he's like, he looks like he's stoned almost, but he's like hammered. So then Leslie gets pissed off because he won't get her a snake juice. And she's like, John Ralphio. And he's like, yeah, I'm right here. He literally, he's not on screen. And then all of a sudden she calls him in this very crowded, very loud bar. And he's immediately right next to him. It's like he appears. It's hilarious. It's not like a, It's not like the one where Ron is with Chris and then he all of a sudden like kind of comes to and he's in a different setting. Yeah, this is it. Like, it still looks funny, but it's, you know, she essentially, she's just John Ralphio. And then he just kind of like slides and he's like, yes, I'm here. She's like, dance up on me. So he's like, yeah, of course. So now Leslie and Anne are next to each other. And then the douche and John Ralphio are dancing like basically in front of them as they're kind of looking at each other, Leslie and Anne, like staring each other down. But it is so hilarious because it's like, you just look, it's like, Anna's with the douche and Leslie's with John Ralphio. My, how petty this night has gotten. Jeez. Ben, who is now drunk from the snake juice, watches on sadly, like I said. So he's just kind of, he didn't understand like what was going on. He doesn't know that Leslie and Anne are fighting. So when Leslie kind of snapped at him, obviously it had to do with Anne. It had nothing to do with Ben. He doesn't know that though. So he's kind of sad because she also like basically told him go away and then called John Ralphio to dance. You know, it's like, what the hell? So he still doesn't know like where he and Leslie stand. So Andy comes over to kind of shoot the shit with him. He tries to help out, but as always, he says the wrong thing. So yeah, Andy's like, you guys should try doing this. You know, you should role play that she's your boss and you guys can't have sex because it's forbidden. He's like, that's literally what our situation is. You know, Andy's like, oh, okay. All right, well then make up like something else. Like she's really into tickling. Like this is really stupid, but... All right, more of Leslie and Anne fighting. We get a great line. They're like fighting outside of a bathroom now. Anne says, I don't understand why everything is always my fault. And then Leslie, again, you're like, she thinks this is a great argument, but it's so stupid because she's like, not everything is your fault, Anne. Don't always make it about you. So I love that. She could have just like been like, yeah, it is your fault. But instead it's like, no. I'm not letting you have all the fault. I want some of it. So just being like, you know, shitty, but it's great. So then Anne finally tells Leslie like enough, like because Leslie keeps saying like, well, if you don't do this, then this won't happen. And I need to do this for you because otherwise it, and Anne's just like, she's had enough. She's like, I don't want your help. I don't want your help anymore. And the two of them decide, it's like, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't be friends anymore. Like, what the hell's going on here? So they go their separate ways. All right. So then we cut over to maybe the only two sober people in the building, Donna and Chris. She points out how everyone's wasted, and now we get one of the greatest clips in Parks and Rec. Sorry, one of the greatest clips in Parks and Rec history, the famous snake juice montage.
This snake juice is basically rat poison. Everybody's wasted.
You don't even know one thing. I didn't even say one thing, and then she asked me the whole thing, and I didn't even do it once.
I'm like an elephant, okay? If I walk into a room, it's like, okay, he's in there.
I'm not gonna tell you. That bitch over there. I don't have to brag.
Baba boy.
Turn this music down.
Buzzing, pooping, loving stuff. McDonald's.
Care para no hacer porque fui a una broncha y como les mexicanas en la pizza de la derecha de mi casa.
So obviously it's like kind of hard to follow just listening to it, but if you listen back again, obviously it's Donna who starts off. She's talking to Chris when she says it's the snake juice is poison, basically. But it goes Leslie, Tom, and Ben, Andy, April, Jerry, and then Ron. Ron obviously has no dialogue, but he's just dancing to that song, and he's got like Janet Snakehole's little hat on, which is great because it's like on sideways, but it's still sticking to his head, so there's probably like a band under it. So now the night's over, and everyone piles into Donna's Mercedes. Jerry is strapped to the roof. Tom is in the trunk. Ron and Ben are, well, Ben's like sitting on Ron's lap, sitting up front. Donna driving, obviously, and then Leslie, John Ralphio, and you can't see them, but I believe April and Andy are in the back as well. You might be able to hear them, but again, if it's that crowded, you see Leslie, and then when they take off, a really good, like, you have to listen for it, John Ralphio just like, oh, I'm so lonely, or like, I'm so alone. Like, it comes out of nowhere, but it's just like more like, oh my God, like the guy who's like so like, you know, like he puts on this facade, but he's actually just kind of pathetic and he has like no one in his life. So, all right. The next day, Ben and Leslie, who are both very hungover, and they look so fucking hilarious, especially Leslie. Like, she's, her hair is just, like, all poofy. And, like, Ben comes into her office, and just like Michael Scott, when he's sad and he lays behind Pam's desk, like, that's how Leslie is. You can only see her feet coming out. So, yeah, Ben comes in, and he's like, hey, Leslie, we have to do the interviews for the new PR director for the health department. And Leslie's just like, I don't think I've ever been this hungover before. Ben's like, oh, really? He's like, I felt great. I ran 2 miles this morning. Really? No, I threw up in the shower. It's great. All right. But then, like, yeah, Ben and Leslie talk a little bit more, and we just find out that Leslie is just sad. Like, obviously, she's very sad about what happened with her and Anne the night before, but you can tell she's sad about Ben, too. Like, she still can't be with this guy that she's in love with, you know? And she knows, like, she apologizes to Ben, too. She knows she was kind of rude to him. Like, even he's like, well, you know, like, it wasn't that big a deal. He knows what was happening, but, you know, she still feels the need to apologize, so it's nice. All right, so this is a fantastic part. We head back over to the shoeshine stand. And it cuts us right in to Andy is already shining Kyle's shoes, speaking of Kyle, and it cuts right in, and Kyle is already like in the middle of a conversation, and he just tells Andy, well, the doctor says it's probably not serious, but it could be. So, like, a very hungover Andy just dismisses this. He's basically just like, oh, shut up, Kyle. Like, I don't care. Just then, April, who I'm pretty sure she's like still drunk. At this point, like, obviously hungover, but like, she's just talking like Janet Snakehole still. She tried it with Jerry earlier and he was just like, whatever, and just like walked away. But like, she's trying to do this with Andy, and it's like, of all people, like, even Andy's not feeling it. Like, he tells her, he's like, babe, I'm really sorry, but Burt Macklin died last night with that last, you know, sip of snake juice. So like, she gets like pouty and she takes her hat off and she's like, fine, I was just trying to have fun, you know, and starts walking away. So he calls her back, but then he's like, hey, Snakehole. He's like, you know, I'm Burt Macklin might be gone, but I'm his brother, Kip Heckman. So like, I'm purposely kind of chopping it up like that, because that's how he says it, because he's like hungover, but also he's just trying to come up with this on the fly. But yeah, he says Burt Macklin's dead and that he is his brother, Kip Heckman. So of course Kyle's like, why don't they have the same last name? Shut up, Kyle. So, you know, like, April gets excited about this and she like kind of runs off like, you'll never have my body or whatever it is. And Andy's like, yeah, he's like kind of happy now that he made April happy. And then he throws up all over Kyle's shoes. It is so good, man. It's like, because it's almost like the scene where Andy is shining shoes and he plops down on the chair super hard and then falls over. It's kind of like that, because he plops back down on his little seat and then just throws up all over Kyle, and then it just cuts immediately. But it is so funny. Like, vomit is one of the most disgusting things, obviously, but like, I'm still one of those people who laughs so hard when I see, like, if it's not like an over the top vomit scene, but something like that, that is just so quick. Oh my God, it was so funny. All right, so we're in Tom's office now. John Ralphio is handing him a check, actually, because he's buying out all of his shares in the Snakehole Lounge. We do, like, if you'll recall, Donna also bought shares in the Snakehole Lounge, but Tom's like, wait a minute, like, how come you don't have to sell yours? And she's like, because no one knows about mine. And then she kind of threatens John Ralphio. She's like, if you tell anyone, I'll kill you. You know, and he's like, Donna, take it easy. But it's great. All right, so next we're at Anne's house, where Ben has come to try and smooth things over for Leslie. This doesn't make any sense. I know I do this every episode, but like, Leslie and Ben are in the middle of doing interviews for this job, and then what did Ben with, hey, I'm going to go take a breather real quick, and then fucking leave and go to Anne's house? So it's a nice part, but it doesn't make any sense. Like, you know what I mean? And it's like, I don't know. It's like, I don't even know if Ben knows where Anne lives. Has he been in Anne's house? Probably. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe he hasn't. So, but yeah, he Anne feels awful about the fight too. She's also wearing snow pants because she said she was going to go sledding when she got home last night. And then it shows like the pans back her front yard. It's like a beautiful summer day. Her lawn looks great, by the way. But anyway, yeah, Ben basically apologizes for Leslie. And then Anne tells Ben, she's like, you're a great guy. No wonder Leslie likes you. So now he's got confirmation. He's like, wait, what'd she say? You know, it's awesome. Back at City Hall, Ron fights with Chris a little bit over Tom having to quit the Snake Hole Lounge, but Chris stands his ground. So this, I probably didn't even need to add this part in, but at the end of the episode, Tom gets like a bottle of snake juice from Ron, and it's in like a nice wooden, you know, little case that he made for him. So we go over to the interviews. So we see Dennis Cooper himself. This is the man who was fired earlier in the episode, trying to reapply. We will see something similar to this down the road when the animal control guys get fired and then they reapply in the same episode for their jobs back, not realizing that that's the jobs they're interviewing for. So it's great. Then Anne walks in. So we're like, wow, we didn't think she was actually going to show up. Her sweater's inside out and backwards. Leslie and Anne, they talk a little bit, and then they decide that they're going to go to the bathroom to puke together. Next day, Anne comes back in and she interviews with Chris and she nails the interview. We don't see this. We just kind of, Leslie's given us an overview of what happened. So now she's going to be working part-time at City Hall and part-time at the hospital. So it still just doesn't really make that much sense to me. Like, Anne just to be like a full-time nurse, and it's like, you know what? City Hall needs me. But maybe it is just like, because Leslie keeps talking throughout the episode. It's like, well, you'll never have to pull anything out of a person's butt again, which is like another running joke. Leslie thinks like Anne does way worse things at the hospital than she actually does. But yeah, so that's the episode for the tag. We see the Parks crew listening to Crazy Ira and the Douche. They're like, you know, internet radio. That was a big thing. I guess some people still use their computers. I don't know. I don't. I just use my phone. But anyway, they're all laughing their asses off as the Douche is telling an overfabricated version of the party that he was at with Anne. And then he suggests that Anne and Leslie are lesbians, because he's like, they were in the bathroom the whole time, probably lesbians. And then, like, as he says that, you hear "Come to My Window" by playing by Melissa Etheridge. All right, so that's the episode. On IMDb, this episode is sitting at an 8.8. Some of my thoughts real quick. This is a fantastic episode, obviously. One of the best cold opens with the coffee pot scene. It's up there with Ron pulling his own tooth out. And actually, like I said before, Ron has all the best ones. The Google Earth one, where he tosses his computer. The one with the dog where it's licking his face. And he's like, all right, take it out and shoot it. It's great. We officially meet Janet Snakehole. We don't meet any new, like, recurring characters, I don't think. But definitely Janet Snakehole. Everyone wasted. That montage is classic. Again, it doesn't really do it justice. The clip I played for you, but you just go online and watch it. Like, it's so much better to see in person. Andy throwing up on Kyle, like I just talked about, is one of my favorite, physical comedy parts of the show. And now Anne works at City Hall. So, all right, that is going to wrap up this episode. If you'd like to contact the show, citizensofpawnee@gmail.com is how you can do that. You can also like and follow on Instagram at Citizens of Pawnee Podcast and at Parks Rec Memes. Remember, if you want to send in an email, voice clip, whatever, for episode 100, which is in 2 weeks. So, I got a couple in already. And what I was just asking, and if you aren't familiar, for the 100th episode, I want to hear from you guys. I want to know what you love about this show, Parks and Rec, why you're obsessed with it. Obviously, you like the show enough to follow a podcast about it, so let me know. Next week, I'm going to be covering Season 3, Episode 14, Road Trip. Thank you for listening to Citizen to Pawnee, a Parks and Recreation podcast. I don't know why I always do that with my voice. Why do I do that? My name's Brian, and I'll see you next Tuesday. Tom dresses up as T-Pain at Anne's Halloween party in the episode Greg Pakitis.